slug. So each of these variations have slightly different format of meeting. For instance, the Hazelwood user group is considered a newbie group. So anybody who's new to using the Linux operating system, that's the group to go to. There's no question. It's too simple. They will handhold you through anything you need as far as getting it loaded on your computer, learning how to use it, solving a problem. The meeting this night tends to be more of a presentation format, and that's what we'll be having tonight. Before we start the presentation, we always do, well, actually, this is different than we do at most months. Most months we do two presentations, one more of a basic tutorial at the beginning, which would usually start now at 6:30. Then we have the announcements and the Q&A, and then we have not formal presentation, the main presentation, where it's a little more technical and in-depth. So because of the presentation tonight taking some extra time, we're not going to have the tutorial in the front, and we're just going right into announcements and Q&A. The announcements is what I've been doing. So other announcements, let's see. Next week, on Wednesday, the SUSE Linux / Novell Users Group. It's a lunchtime meeting on Wednesday. There's somebody coming in who's a SUSE, developer is the right word, but somebody who works at SUSE all the time. He's coming into St. Louis, and he'll be doing a presentation at lunch on next Wednesday. It's Jay Bruce. I have a look at the calendar, and that'll show you where the thing is. It's out on Manchester, and it's a good lunch. And I think it's going to be a covered lunch, so freebie. So, also next week, and I don't know quite what to say on this yet. Next week on Thursday night would normally be the St. Louis Lug meeting, and we're definitely not meeting at the usual location because of Strange Loop, which is a conference being held down at Union Station next week. Strange Loop is basically a programmers type conference, basically a lot of coders are down there, and they're all trying to out-geek each other. So, but we figured that would be enough of a draw that we won't meet our usual location. We will have some kind of a meeting down at Strange Loop. We talked about meeting at Maggie O'Brien's, which is probably where we'll wind up. There's also a larger party for Strange Loop people, and we might just piggyback on that. So, again, check the website and find out the details, which we'll hopefully get decided here before next week. So, how many people are here for the first time or who haven't been here in a long time? Okay. Stan, turn around. Wave, Stan. Stan is always curious how people found out about us. So just run by Stan at some point and tell him how you found out about tonight's meeting, because he's just curious as to figuring out where we're getting the word out and what people wanted to hear about. So let's see. Other announcements. Lee, am I forgetting anything?
Calendar. Oh, the calendar has been vastly improved through to Stan's diligent, tireless efforts. So that should actually draw the red down on the front.
Yeah, for those of you, if you haven't been out on the calendar, if you go to slug.org/calendar, we had something hooked up to the projector already. I put it up there, but it's basically a calendar for St. Louis of all the technical events in St. Louis. So it's not just this group's meeting, but all of the computer meetings that we know about in St. Louis, and sometimes they're even beyond computer stuff. They're just technology of some kind that some of us have been interested in. So, so there's also a few historical references. For instance, Monday was the 1949 was the anniversary of the first bug found in a computer. The story about Grace Hopper and taking the bug out of the relay. We've got a bunch of little historical things in there, which make it kind of fun to read. So, go to the calendar and you can always find our meetings there.
Does anyone know how long Sluge's been around? This group?
This group is over 20 years old, 22 maybe, do we figure? I know there's a way, yeah, we can go back and look, but I think it's 22 years old. This is Ralph from back then. Don, Mike, where'd Mike go? Mike, there you
go. I haven't been there very long. I've only been here since 2000.
Okay. So, yeah, I think it's 22 years, but roughly 20. Yeah, when this group started, there were only a couple other computer-type groups in town, so most of the, like the other one was Deacus, which was the deck user group, so it was devoted just to specific deck products and hardware. Other announcement type things?
I've got just to let everybody know that we're thinking about bringing back the user account capability on some of the servers we have. I'm working on a questionnaire right now to see what people might be interested in if we brought back. Now, we're not talking dial-up lines. We'll just be talking about servers that you could get into and use. If anyone has any ideas of something they'd like to see as a feature or a function that we offer, come see me so I can include it on this, the questionnaire. The questionnaire will be going out once it's ready to be announced.
A number of you used to have, some of us still do have, email addresses on that machine. So I'm gary@slug.org, for instance. This will make it, so not only we'll have email accounts, but back to having web pages or other sort of access you want to centralize Unix on the computer. Let's see, other announcements. So that might be something else. Okay. Q&A. So this is the question and answer part of the meeting. At this point, you can ask any sort of a question. It has a lot better chance of getting answered. It has something to do with computers. It doesn't have to be about the digital intrusion and privacy stuff. Those questions can come after our speakers start later. But just general computery type questions. Not everybody at once.
Wait. What's it take to reset a top account on a server? Assume a mail or format, you want to stuff a new message back into the queue?
I'm sorry, start that again. What does it take?
What's the secret to resetting a top account on a mail server? There's a file, it's courier.imap/pop. I found a file, courier something, that showed the last message read. The file renamed was to mailer cur. But even after reversing all that, it still thinks it has already seen the message. I can't find anything else that would indicate what the current message is. It's nice to start with something.
Yeah. Anybody know how to reset a POP account? Actually, sometimes I come up with good answers. But not on this one.
I have a question that maybe someone... I want to convert my Hotmail to IMAP. I was told that I would have to start up Thunderbird or some other mail client and drag a folder or a few folders at a time on my Hotmail, which is all stored on my laptop through the IMAP server, and it would copy them over. And it's sort of works, but sometimes messages just don't show up on the IMAP server or on the IMAP account. But it doesn't tell me that it didn't copy them all. So now I have to go through folder by folder to try to figure it out. And I have thousands of mail folders, literally. Is there some tool that I can
use? So you're still getting mail on the original POP server?
Yes. I'm sort of in an in-between state right now where some of my mail comes to POP. Trying to get some of it over, or all of it over to IMAP. It's really a mess right now.
Yeah.
Did you set a forward? from the first account to the second account?
I could do that, yes. But and then we get all the new mail, but I have lots of old mail.
So you're saying you're pushing local holders in the pop plan up to an IMAP configuration?
Yeah.
The stuff that's getting lost, is it just new messages or is it?
No, it's old messages that were stored in some of these folders that I'm dragging and dropping.
Do you have access to the IMAP server? Shall I access?
No.
How many messages would be in one of these folders typically?
Oh, anywhere from 10 to 1,000.
The ones with 10, do they make it, and the ones with 1,000
make it? Generally,
yeah. Maybe
it's
just flooding the pipe.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Timing out, maybe?
Yeah. There's no tool that I can get my system administrator on the IMAP server to run and say, here, just take all the pop folders on this disk and copy them.
Well, because you'd have to run it on clients, assuming their inbox format, the first thing you have to do is convert the mail to format.
Yeah.
So, if you wanted to take a folder on your machine, convert the mail to format, but then you have to shell access the IMAP server to push it up there.
Well, someone hand it to him.
Okay. If you can figure out what the naming convention is on the server, sometimes they're not folder name under mail, which is pretty much a standard, but then you have a third new intent under that.
Yeah.
If you can take your inbox on your machine, convert them to mail format, it might be easier to drop them up there. If you can set the naming convention right and just fill the tarball of everything as a test and just put it up there and have them on tar in your mail folder.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but look for inbox to mail. And there's a bunch of different utilities up there to split around.
Okay.
Susan.
What's the best plan for next time I buy a laptop and I want to put Linux on it? Should I just forget about buying a machine anywhere and getting rid of Windows and putting on Linux? Or should I buy a machine without an operating system or buy one of the machines that you can get with Linux already on?
Let's see.
Last time I bought a machine, it had Windows 8 on it, and I had double the time overcoming when we got the Wi-Fi. I did it, I don't know how, I'm sure the randomness of my attempts did
something.
But, I don't want to go through that again.
Well, it's getting a lot more common now with the UEFI stuff. I use SUSE, and there's a how-to in SUSE. You have to boot a shim first.
Mm-hmm.
That tells the motherboard to Microsoft, and then it'll boot to Linux for you.
Yeah.
But you know, most of the major distros have a how-to nowadays on how to do UEFI.
So that's still doable?
Oh, yeah. The other thing is, the first thing you might want to do is take a thumb drive and go to the store and boot it with a thumb drive and see what driver you're going to fall on. You know, see if you guys, take a look at the Wi-Fi chipset, whatever it is, and then Google that, make sure you got a driver part. That's the biggie. Most of the touchpads and that are okay. I just took a 3-year-old Acer 15-inch. I'm going to St. Paul the end of the month, and I needed something, a big laptop to work on. Everything fell right into place except for the Broadcom chipset, and I had to download it, drop it in a new repository for the chipset, and then it came right up, so I had no problem doing it.
Other opinions on laptops?
Of course, we know my opinion. You got a Mac.
I have a Mac, but it's 10 years old, so.
We'll get a new one.
Get a new Mac.
Macs are too expensive. You can buy three.
They are expensive.
Well.
And you got to buy all the software.
One. What? You do?
There's a lot of open
stuff.
Backboards.
I haven't been buying a lot of software. I think one thing is look for the hardware that you like. And on my Mac, I run virtual machines, so I can look like I'm running Linux at any given moment. Just switch it in, make it full screen, make it multiple screen. And while I'm in that mode, it's just a Linux machine. I can dual boot into other operating systems, which I believe includes Linux also. Instead of switching to Windows, I use it for games, but believe there are how-tos on how to do various flavors of Linux. But I like it partly because I went to factory training on why they did what they did.
You went to factory training?
On why they built the Lisa the way they did.
Oh, okay.
And hardly anybody remains who knows the original design ideas. Including the people building the Macintoshes, they're forgetting that and drifting away from some of the reasons I really like them.
Now going from new laptops to old laptops, have a Sony Vaio, lithium-ion battery that hasn't been charged in probably close to a year. So yes, it's very dead. And I know, yeah, you're not supposed to let a lithium-ion battery go for more than 90 days without charging it, but it's a done deal. So what's the best way of reconditioning it? Specifically, to the best of my knowledge, you're supposed to completely discharge it and then recharge it, like go through that cycle four or five times. But what's the best way of discharging it? I mean, the fact that it doesn't even power up the laptop, is that just considered
that's the best
fully time discharged?
Well, find yourself a big power resistor and put it across the battery.
That was what I was thinking, yeah.
But it doesn't power up the laptop, so that's kind of...
Well, it hasn't had a charge for a year, so...
And if you put it on the charger, what does it do? I
haven't put it on the charger yet. Start this process.
I think putting it on the charger would be the first thing.
Well, the question is should it be yet more completely discharged? As Lee said, should I just put a resistor across that battery and drain it further?
I seem to remember reading in Apple literature somewhere about not letting them get below 3%.
Yeah.
That they can be damaged if they get lower than that. Yeah. Well, this one probably is, and I've seen some that are like totally discharged, and we just charge it back up again and they're fine. As far as conditioning it?
Have you tried discharging it?
No. Well nothing except just pushing the button on the laptop and noticing that nothing happens. So.
Yeah, the standard way to condition it is charge it up fully and then run it down. That way the computer gets, the internal processor gets synchronized.
And somewhere in Apple's documentation they have a lithium ion carrying feeding document. I couldn't tell you how to find it right now.
And there's supposed to be some techniques like, what was it, putting it in the freezer or something like that? There was some technique of doing something with it that's supposed to sometimes recover the dead battery. Mm-hmm. And if it's dead, you don't lose anything because it's already dead.
Mm-hmm. Some of the smart battery chargers, if it's too low, it won't be able to refuse to charge it.
Mm.
Because they just think it's below... salary, and from a safety point of view.
Okay.
So
just by measuring the amount of voltage in it, you know, a certain voltage you're going to charge. So what some of them have been able to do is almost get like a dumb charger, find out what pins go to the battery,
mm-hmm.
at least get it like a surface charge to so get up above that point so the smart charger will take over.
So it's probably not a good idea to put a resistor on it.
Probably not.
Put it even worse.
First thing I would try is charging it.
I think I'd charge it, and then long-term storage, they recommend after the charge.
Mm-hmm.
The store might go a few months or something.
You have it at halfway point.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Oh, you go. This probably is a good point then to take a short break. Once again, first off, thanks to Graybar for being our marvelous host for many years and providing the room and facility. And also, tonight they have provided a little RC Dovers for us. So thanks to Valerie for getting them all prepared. And so take a 5-minute break, help yourself with some hors d'oeuvres, some coffee, then come on back, and we'll have Scott and Denise talking about digital intrusion and privacy. So. Go out in the hall. Oh, yeah. I'll show you.
You'll see the one that's going. Yes, you do. How are you?
Doing okay.
Yeah.
Much.
Hey, Doug. I know. What's the deal? You hurt yourself? Didn't you?
No, I just wasn't longer.
For some reason, I was thinking you broke your leg.
No, I haven't done that.
I do not. So next time we get a new car,
I didn't yet because it wasn't ready. I'm paranoid to mess up a couple of the slides.
I don't know how I did it. I'm not allowed to touch my own slides.
Do you ever use the ones I give you?
Yeah.
In classroom?
No. Yeah, I could get access to that.
Do you really do use them?
I don't use the PowerPoint.
Y'all had me worried. I began to think maybe Homeland Security
started to pick you up on the way here. And
they almost did. He signed in as Edward Snowden.
I did.
Oh, no.
You know what she does?
She walks up next and goes, Scott, you're like Denise. Don't blow my cover.
So, Scott. Well,
actually, normally we show up and it's the regular guard, and he's got a book with Sloot name on it, and everything's fine, copacetic, right? Tonight we show up, and it's a new guard, and he goes, oh, nobody told me you all were coming. Gee, I had to make some phone calls. We don't have a regular book. Let's see, what? You sign in a special book, So we're like, this is anything special.
Is this on?
It's on now. Of course, it has to be about, that group.
That's awesome.
I was sitting here, is that one of those trip lights? Those are great presentations. I bought one. They are better than anything.
Okay, why aren't I getting anything? Is it still warming up or is it done?
It's done. It's just saying no signal.
Press source.
Oh, you know what?
Is it a wrong one? There we go.
I don't know anything about this stuff.
The important thing is you are here.
Okay. Tom, where were you the other day?
Second Webster Brown Church.
Doing my stuff.
Okay.
My problem, so much of the activity is covered. I don't want to discuss the admin book and the admin test. Oh, we can't put it in the list. I want to talk about receiver stuff off the list.
And
they both died over a period of time. I'm not sure what theirs. Apparently now the Bud name has been reallocated to another department. There's one out there at the bottom of the box that I can get on to.
The other way we've been answering that is, yes, it's being recorded. I'm on the self-address and book of Fort Meade, Department of Homeland Security.
That'll work. No idea.
So,